Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lauren, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lauren, and I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years. I write the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction, and you can also watch me play in the Adventurous and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we're talking about the Cleric. That was a chorus of angels, by the way.
Or very talented devils.
Ooh, I like that you called me talented.
And before we get started, we want to mention that although we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we want to remind you that we're not providing any kind of official answers. We're here to offer advice, and you can use it however you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. But don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
So, clerics go way back in role-playing games, right? And not necessarily even in a good way. Like, I feel like nobody, no class more than the cleric is kind of confined to a single role. Now, I'm going to tell you, that's a sacred cow, right? Like, clerics these days can be anything. But still, when we think of who's going to play the cleric, who's going to play the healer, right? These champions of their divinity are constantly just shoehorned into the role of giving green hit points to the characters who need the most. But that doesn't have to be what they do, you know? In 2E especially, you can build a cleric for any number of purposes, and I cannot wait to get to the build section of this video so we can kind of discuss it. So, some common examples of clerics from pop culture. What about that guy from Game of Thrones? What was his name? You know, like the High Sparrow. The High Sparrow. Was that his name? Did he have a real name, or was it just the High Sparrow?
I can't tell you, Lauren. I don't know Game of Thrones at all.
What? You don't get off my show. This is no longer, you are no longer a co-host. You are now, an exile. Yes. Ah, heathen. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I'm playing an evil cleric today.
All right. Let me tell y'all something here, okay? Let me tell y'all something. This is not about the cleric. My entire view of fantasy, right, is Game of Thrones. When I think about the grittiness of that world, like the way that monsters are there, you know, but it's subtle. It's really subtle. Magic is subtle until it's not, you know. That's how I think about my fantasy. So when I'm listening to our party going through dungeons, that is the cinematography that I'm thinking about. You have to watch Game of Thrones, Luis, or at least the first, like, what, 7 seasons, not the last 2?
maybe. Someday. We'll see.
All right. While we're on this topic, what's your theme? How do you think about, you know, the fantasy world? I've got the dark, gritty style of Game of Thrones. What's yours?
It varies, I think, depending on what the story is at the time. Like, I don't have a default fantasy, I feel, because I didn't grow up with a lot of fantasy. I didn't hop into D&D and RPGs and stuff until I was in my teens. So I guess if I have a fantasy that I like, the one that I would default to would be something out of, like, Zelda, but specifically the Majora's Mask fantasy. Things are dark there, and it's a kind of a grim world where things are going wrong, but there's always, like, good to be done and hope to be found.
Yeah, and there's kind of, like, that sense of mystery around every corner, too,
yes.
You know?
But it's not so dark that, like, you know, everyone's going to die, yeah, and everything's going to be bad and terrible the whole time.
I grew up with fantasy. I grew up with Majora's Mask, but you know what else I grew up with? Batman. Speaking of Batman, how would he be a cleric, Luis?
Hold on, we haven't talked about... We gave one example of a cleric...
Please, who else you got?
Friar Tuck from Robin Hood. He's a priest, and he knows how to fight. I'd say he's a war priest.
That counts. That totally
he's
counts.
He's a man of the cloth and pulls a sword.
Or is he just a monk with the religion skill?
He is a monk, but he's a different type of monk. He's your European monk rather than your your Eastern Asian styled monk.
Well, yeah. The monk class doesn't have to be Eastern Asian style, though. That could just be a European monk. Who's going to beat people in the... No, I agree. That's probably a cloistered cleric with, like, domains and maybe monk because he knows how to fight. That's interesting. We could build Fire Tuck.
There's probably lots of healers that you can grab from any video game and be like, that's a cleric. So there are priests from, like, Fire Emblem games and all your other fantasy games. You can be your own cleric in Skyrim.
The White Mage.
Yeah, the White Mage from Final Fantasy, exactly.
I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't mention, like, the Pope. You know, actual priests.
Actual priests calling on to their gods. That's definitely a thing that happens, yeah. Whether or not they can, you know, call magical weapons out of nothing was yet to be seen. Maybe the Pope has no need to call on spiritual weapons as of late.
All right, I've got it. I've got the best one, okay? What was the name of the exorcist in The Exorcist?
I don't know. I don't remember. I don't know that movie very well.
That guy. that guy. That is a fun way to build a cleric, right?
The priest from The Exorcist. Lancaster Marin. Father Marin. Sure, great.
Father Marin. There we go, y'all. That's some good examples of the priest. But that's not what I want. I want good examples of Batman.
Batman. I think I'm going to rely on kind of what I did with the champion episode, where I call on Azrael, who was a member of the Order of Saint Dumas, who are a religious group. He can also, not only is he a champion, but he's also kind of a cleric, probably a war priest style cleric, depending on how you want to build him. And he was Batman, as I've been told by Ryan. You know, that is an official Batman that is religious. There are other religious characters in Batman. I could see someone like Ra's al Ghul being kind of cleric-y.
But do any of these characters spread the good word? I feel like for a cleric to be a cleric, they have to spread the good word.
Well, they have to spread the word that they think is good. It might not necessarily be a capital G good. Nothing that comes to mind right away. Is Batman religious? No. Is Daredevil religious? Daredevil would be a great cleric.
Daredevil would be a good cleric.
He's a very good Catholic boy. And Daredevil and Batman, when you think about it, they should have their name switched. But anyway, Batman himself, Bruce Wayne, I don't know. I don't think he's very religious in the comics.
I think Daredevil could be a monk with the cleric archetype. I think that fit pretty well.
But, yeah, I'll use Azrael as kind of... otherwise, I always have my fallback of, like, hey, clerics prepare spells, much like Batman prepares his equipment when he goes out and has his utility belt ready to go with whatever he needs.
I feel like some combination of monk-cleric or cleric-monk makes for a really good, like, just aesthetic. And I don't mean like the kind of, oh, that looks nice aesthetic, but like when you think of like the noun aesthetic, that, you know, I think that's good. That's a pretty good way to do it.
Well, so how about your test? I think you'll have a lot easier time finding a Viking mapping to a cleric than Batman.
You know, this is why. Okay, so I kind of like the Viking test for a few reasons, because on one hand, when I was making my build for this episode, I was immediately going to Vikings, because apparently that's what I do. And been like, no, Lauren, you can't do that. That's why you have the Viking test. You put them up there. All right, so for the Viking test, this is so easy, y'all. And you have two totally different types, right? Okay, so for your war priest cleric, all right, you have to imagine, okay, your longship has just stormed the beaches of Essex, right? Does Essex have beaches? It does now. And
I mean, if you're by the ocean, you have a beach.
Yeah. Well, I know, but like some of the old kingdoms were like kind of central Britain, you know?
Maybe. Well, maybe, anyway.
Maybe a river. Yeah.
You land to beat up the Anglos and the Saxons.
Yeah. So all of these Vikings start pouring out of this longship, and one of them is at the front with sword and shield in hand, singing, "Go forth, crush them in the name of Odin," you know, bam, war priest, you know, calling upon the blessings of Odin and Thor to smite the Christians. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a war priest all day. But then you got on the whole opposite side, okay, back in Norway, you've got King Harald's Hall, right? Mm-hmm. He might have, you know, he might have some religious scholars there, some cloistered clerics that are, you know, writing the prose Edda, you know, writing some of the sacred texts that we now have, that actually, the very few that we have, the written accounts of the Norse religion.
Lauren, it's very clear that you know a lot more about Vikings than I do, and I'm just going to nod and accept all of this.
Yeah, no, clerics make great... Look, here's the thing. Here's why I love the Viking test. You cannot stump me. Listeners at home, I challenge you to stump me on the Viking test. I do not think it can be done.
I trust you on that. Are we talking just like give me a class and I'll find a Viking for it, or give me any build combination and I'll try to make a Viking for it?
Okay. I like both of those. So mm-hmm. Let's go with A and let's go with B, but separately. Give me a class. You can't stump me. Give me any like build. I can find a Viking way to build it.
There we go. You heard it here.
Yep. All right, listeners, but let's actually get down to the nitty-gritty, talk about what the cleric does mechanically in PF2E. So to start with, your primary key attribute is going to be wisdom. You don't have any options on this. It's what your spells are based on. It's what your class DCs are based on. It's going to be wisdom. Your hit points are not the worst, honestly. Like, if a fighter is D10... Or not D10. These days, a fighter is 10. And your hit point... A cleric's hit points are 8. Like, you can go toe-to-toe with folks, you know?
Mm-hmm. From then on, you are trained in perception, but seeing as wisdom is your key ability score, you're probably going to have a pretty decent perception anyway. You keep focusing on your wisdom. Your saving throws have you trained in fortitude, trained in reflex, and an expert in will. Again, your will is going to probably be through the roof with all your wisdom focus.
You're trained in religion, obviously. You get one skill of your choice as determined by your deity. So if your deity is the deity of gold, you might get society or diplomacy because you like to barter. You're also trained in a number of additional skills equal to 2 plus your intelligence modifier. So your focus really isn't on knowing how to do a ton of things, like say the rogue or somebody else, but you can know the things that matter most to you.
Attack-wise, you are trained in simple weapons. You are trained in your favored weapon of your deity. And by the way, if it happens to be uncommon, like if your deity's favored weapon is katana, you gain access to that weapon, so you can have that right out of the gate. And you're also trained in unarmed attacks, but this training might change a little bit depending on what your choices are when you make your character. We'll talk about that in a second. Additionally, you're also untrained in all armor, but again, your choices might alter that. And you are trained in unarmored defense. And finally, you're trained in your divine spell attacks and your spell DCs.
There's a few things that are going to be core to every cleric. The first one is your deity. You have to pick a deity. I think there's some wiggle room on this one, though. For example, I think there is, and I'll tell you why. If you pick a pantheon, sure, you can mechanically say, I follow this deity, but you can roleplay it however you want. You can roleplay it as a pantheon, all right? Like, I can list Odin, but I can call upon the might of Thor. I can call upon the wisdom of Freya, you know? Yes.
Well, what I'm referring to, in first edition, you had the option to kind of revere a concept. You might be like, oh, I'm a worshiper of the concept of nature or whatever, but not necessarily worship a nature deity and still get stuff out of that. But here, you have to pick a deity. If you pick a pantheon, you still have to pick a deity, and you're still worshiping deities in some way, but you're going to be writing a deity on your character sheet somewhere, and that's going to happen. There's no kind of wiggling out of that and saying, oh, I'm a cleric of good vibes. No, you are a cleric that worships a deity or a pantheon, and that's going to happen. And when you pick that, that's going to determine your extra spells that you add, and also going to determine whether you have the harm or heal spell for your divine font. And then you might have that option between both, depending on your deity as well.
After you pick your deity, you're also going to have an anathema, the thing that that deity is not happy about you doing, so don't do it. Mm-hmm. You're going to get to pick kind of the meat of the cleric, I think. Your doctrine. This chooses what kind of cleric you're going to be. Are you going to be a cloistered cleric where you're better behind books and behind the front lines? Or are you going to be a war priest where you're better at the front lines, sword and shield in hand?
Yeah. In short, the cloistered cleric gets a free domain and gets some bonuses to fortitude saves, and their DC ranks increase pretty quickly for their spells. They're the ones that get up to legendary spell casting. Whereas the war priest will get proficiency with extra armors and better proficiency with their weapons, and they won't get up to legendary casting. They'll only get up to master, but they will also get their bonus, their proficiency to their attacks going up a bit quicker than the cloister cleric. And those are the only two available at the moment. Maybe there will be more domains in the future, or doctrines in the future.
And the level up bonuses that you get from those doctrines kind of define the class through its lifespan. When you go into the general feats and things that the cleric gets, it's really kind of bare bones. It's in those doctrines that you'll find how your class is really going to play.
Yeah, the only other big thing that you get other than your basics of your saves, increases, and stuff is your divine spellcasting. Of course, you can cast divine spells. You call upon the power of your god. You are a prepared spellcaster and determine what spells you want every morning. And that's about it. You also have the divine font, which will grant you some extra spells per day that are either the heal spell or the harm spell as determined by your deity. But the big things are your deity, your doctrine, and your spellcasting.
So that's a lot of rules. The rules are boring. Luis, what do these actually look like when you build a character using these rules?
Oh boy. They can look like a lot of different things. Talk real quick about the fact that your deity is probably going to determine a lot of how your character is going to look, and the spells that you're going to pick, and the weapons that you're going to fight with, and like that. So just even that one choice of your deity will make a big difference. But I'm going to go into a pretty interesting build, I feel. I've chosen to cover the War Priest doctrine here, but rather than just armor up and have a big, heavy, clanking, mace-wielding cleric like you kind of imagine on the battlefield, I'm doing something really different. I'm going to be a cleric of Irori, god of monks and punching and all that fun stuff, but my character is going to be an elf, and for my elf heritage, I'm going to take the Ancient Elf, which lets me get a multi-class feat for free right away. It gets me, in this case, the monk multi-class at level 1, with it, as long as I meet the prerequisites. I need 14 strength and 14 dexterity, which you can do, and I think in my build I'd actually pump those both up to 16. And I am both a cleric and a monk right at level 1, which with the war priest doctrine and all that other stuff putting together, that means my fist unarmed attack is a d6 instead of a d4, and I don't take penalties for doing it lethally or non-lethally. I can do both, whichever I need. So that's really fun. And I'm imagining this character as the Holy Bodyguard. What they do is they run around the battlefield and protect other people and keep people in the know about the enemies they're fighting, so as to keep everyone fighting in tip-top shape and taking down enemies as quickly as possible. So what I'm going to do here as an elf, I can also take feats to make myself really fast so I can run around the battlefield really quick, but I am also a war priest, and I'm gonna be clad in like chain shirts, so I don't have to be unarmed or unarmored, to get all the cool monk benefits. At second level, I'm going to take the Healing Hands feat, which lets me roll d10s instead of d8s when I cast the heal spell. At level 4, I'm going to use a multi-class feat, the basic kata for the monk, to get the key rush feat for the monk, which is the first level feat that gives me the key rush focus spell. And what key rush does is when you cast it, you get to stride twice, or step and stride, or stride and step. Basically, you're going to be fast, you cast a spell, run around to wherever you need to defend people. At level 6, I will take domain initiate to take the knowledge domain, and level 8, advanced domain to get the other domain spell. So at that point, you have 3 focus points in your focus pool, and at the start of every combat, you can use your advanced spell to recall knowledge on the enemies you're fighting, so you can tell everyone, here's what we're fighting, I will defend you, go get them. And finally, at 10th level, you have an option here. I think you could either take Heroic Recovery, which is the one action that lets you buff up your healing spell and give the target of your healing spell some bonuses to their speed and attack and damage. Or you can use Replenishment of War to basically give yourself temporary hit points every time you punch someone. And you're going to be punching people a lot because that's what you do. That's how you fight. The Heroic Recovery would go great with your Key Rush because you can use Key Rush to stride twice and get to whoever you need to, then use Heroic Recovery, and then cast Heal as a one-action spell. And then they get all these fun bonuses and get healed. So you can run around whenever you need to with your speed and your Key Rush and heal people whenever they need to, and intercept attacks and use your knowledge to keep the fight short.
I love it. Especially, I love the way Cleric and Monk kind of feel together. You know, they're not the same class. They're not even almost the same class, but together they just fit really well, you know? So for my build, I really wanted to make Vikings, but nope, that's why we have the Viking test. But that's kind of what I like about the fact that we do this, is Cleric's not one of my favorite classes. I've always been kind of frustrated by the fact that, oh, who's going to play the Cleric? Who's going to play the healer? So I wanted to get as far away from that as I could. I didn't intend to make I do all the destructive energy, but it ended up being like that anyway. Anyway, I have presented to you a cult leader. Since we make level 10, I'm assuming that this character will have minions, you know, little cultists at his beck and heed. It's a kobold cultist of Dehak, right? And Dehak, for those who aren't immediately familiar, is the evil god of dragons in Galarian, right? He's the god of destruction and chaos and awful, just bad things. Like, really not nice people. But what I think is fun about this build is I was trying to think, as a kobold, oh, it's easy, I'm going to take all the dragon stuff. No, that's the opposite I'm doing. I'm taking none of the dragon stuff for this cultist of the dragon god, because I'm thinking, like, if you imagine, right, you're a kobold, okay? Just try and picture this. It's hard, but try. You're a kobold, right? Your friends all have, like, a lot of your friends have, like, dragon breath or, like, dragon claws or, like, dragon scales or dragon magic or something. But you weren't lucky enough to be born with any of that. You get a little jealous of it. Maybe you want it so bad that you get into dark magics. Maybe your worship begins to spread. Maybe now you're starting a cult of a dragon, even though you've got the mud blood of dragons, right? Yeah, anyway, so I've made a cloistered cleric here who's got the destruction domain because cleric of Dehak. Obviously, we're taking harmful font and harming hands. That way, we can deal a lot of damage. But I still kind of think of this as like a really subtle kind of magic. Instead of like a burst of negative energy, oh, in like all the like in like the life fates. No, I don't think of that. I just think of like, shudder before the might of Dehak, and then they just like feel it, like the despair hits them like so hard that they take, you know, negative energy damage. That's the kind of stuff I like. That's what I think about, just really subtle like that. We also have directed channel. That way we can take the our harm and we can do it in a 60-foot cone. When we combine that with selective energy so we're not hitting our friends, that's pretty good. You're like shouting like at people to shudder, and then just like everybody eats it, but none of your friends do. Oh my god. And then you put cast down on it. With cast down, when they take damage from harm, they get knocked on their butt. Like, the physical might of your god's influence is just profound with cast down. And finally, we're going with the domain stuff. Advanced domain, because you gotta have more domain spells when you're a cloistered cleric, right? Like, that's the easiest way to cast your magic. And I'm also going to mention on this build the skill feats, because they're really kind of fun. Like, you can really... I get that the cleric is a divine caster, not the occultist spellist, the occultism spellist, but you don't really need it. Like, you can be such a good cult leader. Group impression lets you evangelize to just a ton of people. The actual evangelize skill feat helps with that. Bizarre magic. Oh my goodness. Think about it, right? Like, you're doing divine spells, but if you take the skill feat bizarre magic, people don't actually know what you're doing. They can't recognize as divine spells. That's so cult-like, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Dubious knowledge. Student of the canon. Oh my goodness, like, the class writes itself, you know? And this is a fun character. I'm really excited about this character. And that's why I like that we do this. And just a few interesting spells here. Command. Yeah, you can think of it, right? You know, like commanding followers. Fear. I love... This is my favorite one, though. Final Sacrifice. Right? For those who don't know what it does, if you target a minion, so it has the minion trait and it's one of yours, they explode and deal a ton of damage. Can you imagine sending your followers of Dayhack forward and then just nuking them? It's so cool.
Yeah, cult bald.
Coat bald, yeah. I love it. But as the clerics struggle to, or maybe as...
Like a cleric calls out to their god for help, our patrons and our fans have called to us with their questions.
From user Joss Vlad, I struggle with clerics. They seem to need just too many stats compared with everyone else. Any tips to make them viable?
Yes. One thing I didn't mention with my build here with my cleric monk, but it's a thing that can apply to all clerics, is that you actually don't need to focus on wisdom if you don't want. You can choose all the spells that don't have spell attack rolls or saving throws. Like a spell like heal, if you only use it on your allies, it's only going to heal, so they don't have to do anything like that. So you can pick all the right spells and not focus on wisdom, and save your precious stat boosts for something else, like strength, if you want to be a war priest or something like that. And still have a pretty good cleric, because there's a lot on that spell list that does really good stuff without having to worry about DCs.
Yeah. Consider just building your war priest like you would build a champion. Consider building your cloistered cleric the way you would just build a sorcerer or a wizard, you know? I will mention, too, though, that I love that you're saying you don't have to actually focus on your wisdom, because I think it's the same for wizards and for druids and for sorcerers, as long as you pick the stuff that doesn't have saving throws, you know? You can get all kinds of interesting builds when you think about it like that.
I think the divine list in particular is very suited for that kind of stuff. The other divine or the other spell list might have a little more trouble with that, but yeah, you could definitely do that with all the other spellcasters.
The other spell lists are kind of better at doing it in a way that that is more supportive or more buff based. Like the arcane spell list, you've got haste, you've got stone skin, you've got mirror image shield. Like, you got all kinds of stuff that just is better for buffing. It's good for gish characters.
Next question from user Brian Lane. Where should I position my cloistered cleric in combat? He has low AC and I'd like to keep him back, but three action heal seems to favor the center of the fight. what's the optimal geometry?
Well, I'll remind you that directed channel is a thing. It turns it into a 60-foot cone, right? And if you have selected energy, you're not hitting your allies. So, and on top of that, a three-action... If you spend one action for reach spell and two actions on harm, you can get out to, 60 feet there too? Yeah. Just think about yourself like a sorcerer, you know, of the divine spells. Just be in the back lines and do what you got to do.
Yeah, I was going to suggest reach spell as well. The only other thing I can think of is maybe not focusing on the three action heal all the time. It's great that it can get as many people as possible, but maybe focusing on something like the two action heal to get a big heal on a single target might be more favorable depending on the circumstances. If the fighter is the only one that's really hurt, doing the three action heal to also maybe hurt some people out there might not be the best thing out there, and throwing a really big heal so the fighter can keep going might be a better use of your time and resources at that point.
Or a two action harm. Just gotta say it. From patron Jaina B, thoughts on creation of new pantheons? Luis, I hear that you in particular have some thoughts on this.
I do. I was there when the pantheons were getting put together.
You merely adopted pantheons. Do you get it? You know?
Yes. Do not speak to me of the old magic. I was there when it was written. The pantheons are really interesting in that they are both a single deity and multiple deities at once. I know there are a pantheon, and that suggests that it's a group of deities, but you still have to focus on one deity. I'd recommend kind of grabbing no more than 5 or 6 deities at most if you're looking to make your own pantheon that are compatible both thematically and also with their edicts and anathema and their alignment. That's a lot of things to consider, I know. But the big thing is find a core theme, like, hey, gods of magic or gods of nature or the elven gods or the dwarven gods, like we've shown in the Gods and Magic book, and then grab all of those and then find a way to come up with new edicts and anathemas that could work for any of those deities in a vague kind of sense, because you're going to have to assume that a follower of the pantheon has to worship one of those and still kind of follow that patron deity's specific needs as well. So there's a lot to consider, but I think the big thing is find thematic ties. From there, work on figuring out cool domains that they could offer and edicts and stuff like that. And there was even a blog post on the Paizo site from last year. It's called Friends in High Places, where I kind of describe this process as well as a developer and give you some sample pantheons that I've made to kind of show you, you know, how far you can kind of push this thing and the kind of cool things you can come up with when doing this. So there's a lot to consider. The big thing is find the right themes and find the right gods that you think might work together, or at least present an interesting pantheon when working together.
From patron Dom, I would actually be really excited to hear what tips you have for an effective war priest.
I think, as before, don't worry so much about your wisdom. That's just going to make you put points into a stat that will make it harder for you to put points into things like your strength or your dexterity or your constitution. As a war priest, you can focus on self buffs or party buffs with your casting, but yeah, use your precious stat boost to bump up your strength so you can be really strong. And I think another thing to consider is you are not going to be a fighter. And if you feel like your fighter is outpacing you, that's by design. I'm sorry to say, the fighter is probably going to be better at fighting than the cleric. But you can shore that up with interesting abilities like the channel smite to do extra damage with your with your attacks or your buffs that you get from your divine casting. Add interesting mechanics and interesting flavor to how you fight, not just raw numbers.
I've thought about this a lot, really. I've got some tips you might not have thought of, Mr. Dom. So when I'm building a Gish, right, and that's effectively what the War Priest is. It's an out-of-the-box Gish, just of the divine nature. You've got to balance your physical stats and your spellcasting stats, right? I think the best way to do that is to pick one of your physical stats, and I'd say probably strength or dex, to be a dump stat, right? That might sound counterintuitive, but you can get away with it. And let me explain how. If you're a dex-based fighter, right, then you can get by with light armor, you can get by with finesse weapons, and you can be really useful, especially in like a war priest where you can take feats so that you can channel your harmful smites into your weapon. That would be pretty effective. The other way you can do it is if you dump your dex, right, and then you take either a general feat to get proficiency in heavy armor, or you take a dedication feat, like in champion, to get proficiency in heavy armor. Now you can just go all strength and con. And Luis, you're 100% right. You're not going to stack up with a fighter there, but you're going to be close, right? You're going to do pretty well. And that's how I would build the War Priest.
And I also just remembered another thing you can consider is, as soon as you become a War Priest and hit level 2, take a multi-class feat. Take an archetype, specifically. You mentioned the champion and the fighter, but there's also things like the Sentinel that focuses on heavy armor in particular. So if you don't want to lose any of your cleric flavor but still have that heavy armor, or focus on something like the Mauler, so you're like, hey, I fight with a big two-handed weapon, how do I make that even better? There are archetypes that kind of focus in on that particular aspect of what you want to do to shore up where the cleric might be lacking a little bit.
That was my next tip. Yeah. You took the words right out of my mouth. But speaking of these words, we need to have a few more for our next question from patron as we'll just go with that. For cleric, I think making an archer cleric was very hard in 1E because of lack of feats. Is it easier to make a competent archer cleric in 2E?
Yes, because we have an archer archetype. Yay! there's an archer archetype, or there's the Eldritch archer archetype, which suddenly let you focus more in on that. If you go straight cleric, you're going to get a lot of stuff focused on your spellcasting that might not be of use to you when you're using your bow. And even if you are a worshiper of someone like Aristel, whose longbow is their favorite weapon, that's not going to get you a lot, but don't stick to cleric if you don't have to. There's a lot of ways that you can to make your archer better, and I think the archer archetype or the Eldritch archer archetype are really the two big ones to look into. You're going to get a lot of cool stuff out of those that let you do cool stuff with your bow, and that's probably what you want, is to be able to like shoot magic with your bow or be a good archer that happens to occasionally heal people or smite people.
I feel like 1E and 5E and 3.5 and just all of the different D20 systems that we've been used to, they just really made multiclassing suboptimum most of the time. Like, you almost felt discouraged because you lost so much for doing it. I can't stress enough that that is not the case in 2E. Do not sleep on your multi-class feats or on your dedications. They are so cool. And sometimes for the build you're trying to make, you kind of need them. You kind of rely on them. Anyway, though, this conversation has been awesome.
Divine.
But that's all we have for you today. Make sure to check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/nodirection, because it's the support of our patrons that make this all possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.